morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Today we will endeavor to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion, politics, and patriotism, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, I will try to help you understand why these things are happening, share what we can do to protect ourselves, and at the same time, try to predict what these events portend for our future. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His covenant and through His Torah teaching, ultimately striving to replace religion with reason. Our phone number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say is 877-300-7645. We're going to begin by reviewing some emails that I received these last couple of days. This one I received yesterday. For those who listened to yesterday's program, I was not pleased with what happened in the election. And I was not pleased not because I supported the guy who lost. I didn't. But it was obvious that the guy who lost was vastly better qualified to be president on the two issues of greatest concern to Americans than the guy he defeated. And so when Americans have lost the ability to even determine which is the lesser of two evils and will promote the most evil, it is time for concern. And I say this, of course, because on the issue of the economy, Mitt Romney, as a businessman, was the most qualified person to run for the office of president in a century. And as a man who hasn't even worked a day for a business, hasn't even served fries at a McDonald's, Barack Obama is among the least qualified to ever occupy that office. The results speak for themselves. On the second issue, which is how we defend ourselves against and thwart the ongoing goals of Islamic fundamentalism, it would be impossible to have a more misguided, dishonest, and counterproductive president than Barack Hussein Obama. And so it was one of those elections where it was absolutely obvious who was the lesser of these two evils, and yet Americans picked the other guy. So I received this email. It says, I don't understand why people, they may be speaking to me since I did show some significant passion yesterday during my disappointing review, revealing my disappointment over the review of the election results. So he writes, I don't understand why people are so shocked about the election. Did anyone really think that Romney was going to win and save America? It's game on, folks, or game over. We are in the last days, and the only real question now is, how long will it be before America goes down? These things must take place. The only thing that matters is our walk with Yah. We must walk closer with Him and embrace His Torah. The good news is that we know how this is going to end. Things will be getting much worse for a while, but they will be getting much better in 14 years for those of us who have embraced Yahweh's covenant. It is just 5,057 days until September 12, 2026, which is Teruah, in year 6,000 Yah minus 7 years. That's the latest possible day that we could be here. We don't have to worry about what the debt will be 15 years from now. I shared with Firecracker, the person who had written me this email, that I wasn't shocked at the outcome of the election. I was just disappointed. I'm not worried because, like you, I won't be here either. As for Romney, my only point was that relative to the economy and diplomacy, he would have been vastly superior to Obama. Romney, as a businessman, was among the most qualified economically in a century, if not the most so. And Obama is among the least qualified, having not even worked for a business. I suspect 15 years will be the time that America will collapse, within that timeline anyway. But an argument can be made, as Larry made yesterday, that that is giving America too much credit, and that America's demise, her loss of sovereign status, will occur within a decade. The bottom line is, though, you're right, the situation cannot be salvaged. Your conclusion, my conclusion, and Yahweh's conclusion regarding what we ought to do in light of all of this are identical. So let's continue to use those 5,047 days to encourage others to come to the same conclusion, to walk to Yahweh, away from country, away from religion, away from politics, away from patriotism, away from militarism, away from economic schemes, so that we might participate in his covenant. The next email is from someone who is an aficionado of evidence and reason, someone who has gone from being an agnostic to knowing Yahweh personally, who has come to grow from not even considering the Torah to now dedicating enormous amounts of time to translating the Torah himself. And has become quite expert at doing so. He serves as the administrator of the Yada Yah Forum for those who would like to participate in really a high-level discussion. Some of the debates that are conducted there are truly extraordinary. And so James wrote, he says, "While I have come to accept that the majority of Americans will never divorce themselves of the two-party lesser of two evils system, I am now disappointed that they can't at least identify the lesser of the two evils anymore." I decided that I would do some research trying to figure out who the lesser of two evils really was, and the more I dug, the more there was to learn. So I'm going to do this really in two parts. I'm going to begin it today. I'll conclude it tomorrow. And later today, we'll move on to other items in the news. The reason for that is just there's just so much to absorb here. So I'm going to take you through the period right after World War II in terms of how did we get ourselves into this pickle where we now have a $16 trillion deficit, and it's inevitable that it will be $17 trillion because the budget for fiscal year 2013 is already set in stone, and we're going to add another $1 trillion to the existing deficit. So how did we get into this fix? Well, what I found is that there've only been 4 years since 1929. Where Republicans have controlled the White House and both the Senate and the Congress. 4 years. And since 1929, there have been 34 years where Democrats have controlled all three houses of U.S. government. All three branches, I should probably say. So you've got, during the time that that we began to build deficits, 4 years of Republican control, 34 years of Democratic control. And it's actually more interesting than that if you look back beyond 1929. You see, prior to that time, in 1913, which is a red-letter date, a date that shall live in infamy for all Americans who are aware of the negative influence of progressive income tax and of the Federal Reserve, of the central bank, know that progressive income tax was created in 1913, and which is a communist concept, it's a socialist concept, as opposed to everybody paying their fair share. It is a wealth redistribution concept where those who are the most productive pay a disproportional share, and those who are the least productive pay nothing. In fact, are recipients of the share from those who are the most productive. And so both were enacted in 1913. But prior to that time, the U.S. had a budget surplus of $37 million. Now, the numbers I'm going to use when I say $37 million are adjusted for 1983 dollars. And I'm using that just because if we don't set a certain number for dollars, all of this stuff doesn't make any sense because the Federal Reserve and these deficits, the combination of the two, have so destroyed the value of our currency that if you don't adjust for the devaluation of the currency, which we call inflation, then the numbers essentially become meaningless. But prior to 1913, the United States had a budget surplus of $37 million in 13. So in the year 1913, the year that the Federal Reserve was first created, before it had any influence, the U.S. tax rate was 7%. That was the highest rate charged on anyone, was 7% in 1913. And with a 7% federal tax rate, the federal government had a $37 million surplus. But with 9 years of Democratic control that followed 1913, that ended, and deficits ensued. Was $1 billion in, as a deficit. So in the first year of Democratic control of all three branches of government, we went from a $37 million budget surplus to a $1 billion deficit in 1914. In 1915, that deficit grew fivefold to $5 billion. It more than tripled the following year in 1916 to $16 billion. And then in 1917, it was $59 billion. It grew to $74 billion in 1918. Of course, the United States participated in a what is called World War I. It was not a world war. It was a skirmish between financiers and egocentric bureaucrats in Europe in 1917 and 1918. But prior to that time, the trend had already been established, and the $60 billion and $74 billion were just outgrowths of that trend in 1917 and 1918. These are, again, in 1983 dollars. During that time, however, we will speak of the increase in the rate of taxation when we return to Shattering Myths. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm trying to provide a little insight. I did this for my own edification as well as for yours to play off whether or not James's conclusions were right, that America has not only doesn't understand that its so-called two-party system is actually a ploy, that both parties are different sides of the same coin. It's all designed to distract people and to think that they're choosing between candidates that are a real difference, that are significantly different, when they're typically not. At least not today. But what I did find is that if you go back prior to and including World War II and the which is really World War I, and the immediate aftermath of it, there was a huge difference in the growth of the economy and tax rates and who was in charge of the White House and Congress. There's a absolute direct correlation between dismal economic growth and high deficits and high taxation with Democrats. You put those four things together: Democrats, high tax rates, enormous deficits, and poor economic performance. Those things are essentially monolithic through from 1913 on through 1946-47, and that Republicans, economic growth, lower taxes, and surpluses are virtually synonymous during that same period of time. And so The facts are unequivocal as it relates to this, and we're going to dig in and provide more information on it. And then in tomorrow's program, I'll conclude this research, and I will show you that while those things were true, while it was, while you could connect the four negatives to Democrats and the positives to Republicans, starting particularly with Ronald Reagan, that all changed, and it was upended. And now, while it does not make much difference, Republicans are slightly worse overall than Democrats. Well, that may be true prior to Obama. But that's where we're going to end up with this. So, again, in 1913, the U.S. had a budget surplus of $37 million, and the highest tax rate was 7%. So, budget surplus, growing economy, 7% tax rate, $37 million federal budget surplus. In the 9 years that of Democratic control of the three branches of government that followed, they that ended with deficits of $1 billion to $5 billion to $16 billion to $59 billion to $74 billion in 1983 dollars. And during that time, taxation rose from the 7% to 15% and then to 77% confiscatory. It is why we ended up with a recession at that time. Now, the Republicans took control of Congress in 1919. After it became obvious that the Democrats, who had promised to keep us out of the war in Europe, actually conspired to bring the United States into that war, specifically because of the relationship between the Democrats and the Federal Reserve and the Democrats and J.P. Morgan. It was to make money for the Federal Reserve and for J.P. Morgan that the United States engaged in that war. And so when Republicans took control of Congress in 1919, they turned what were huge budget deficits into a surplus again. There was a $7 billion surplus in 1920. And the Republicans at that time, to turn the deficit into a surplus, actually decreased the top tax rate. Republicans controlled all three branches for the next decade, creating budget surpluses of $11 billion, $6 billion, $4 billion, $6 billion, $4 billion, $5 billion, $7 billion, $5 billion, $4 billion, and $5 billion. Each of those surpluses, not deficits. And they took the tax rates from 73% to 58%, and then from down to 46%, before settling at 25%. And during that time, they built the fastest growing economy in U.S. and in world history by lowering the tax rates. And during that same time, what did they do? They turned deficits into surpluses year after year. There is a clear historic pattern here that the world needs to know. Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yetta. We are speaking of the correlation between Democrats controlling the White House, the Senate, and Congress, and the resulting increase in the top bracket of taxation, this new pay your fair share, we want the wealthier to pay a little more tax, that was the dominant theme of this president's re-election bid. With the size of either a deficit or a surplus, and in the case of Democrats, it's almost universally deficits, and almost universally higher taxes. Also with economic prosperity during those terms. So the change in the tax rate, the change in the size of the deficit, and the change in economic prosperity with the Democrats versus Republicans, and it's an extraordinarily clear trend. Now, you may wonder, you know, why did I start at 1913? Well, the reason is that prior to then, there was no federal income tax bracket that you could track because that the progressive income tax was a product of Woodrow Wilson and in 1913. Also, there was no CPI index so that we could use constant dollars for this evaluation prior to that time, because it wasn't until the Federal Reserve began turning American currency from a an asset-based thing into fiat money and began to manipulate the money supply that we devalued our currency. You know, the consumer inflation index is a monitor of the value of the currency, and the more inflation that we see, the more the currency has been debased. Now, that being the case, some might say, all right, so this roaring economy, it was called the Roaring Twenties, where the Republicans reduced the tax rate from 77% to 25%, which is not only created large budget surpluses, turned large budget deficits into large budget surpluses, while building the most robust economy in world history, while lowering, in fact, cutting by two-thirds the tax rate. You see a trend here. This is but the thing I've been harping on, and every time we talk about economics, that these things are all related. Now, some might argue and say, oh, but the Roaring Twenties, that's what caused the Great Depression. That's horse patooey. Sorry. It's not even remotely accurate. The very thing that caused the Great Recession that we are still enduring and trying to work our way out of, 2008 Great Recession, and the Great Depression, which started off really as a Great Recession of 1929, exactly the same thing. You see, the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government collectively conspired to make money too easily available to people who could not afford to borrow money at too cheap a rate, which caused too many people who were ill-equipped to service that debt to borrow to buy things they could not afford. Now, in the 1920s, at the end of that time, what the government did is they constrained the money supply. They raised interest rates, and they made it such that those who had borrowed that money could no longer service their mortgages. They could no longer service their debt, which means they had to sell what they had purchased. And by everyone collectively selling because they could no longer afford and no longer qualify for new loans, they couldn't afford their old loans, they couldn't qualify for new loans. When everybody goes and sells collectively because of this orchestration by the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government manipulating access to credit, you had a recession that turned into a depression. In 2008, exactly the same thing conspired. Money was made too easily available to people who could not afford the loans, too cheaply at adjustable rate mortgages, which had to go up and eventually did go up. And then access to money was constrained, and it caused people to have to sell their homes because they couldn't afford to service the debt. And when everybody tries to sell at the same time, you enter a recessionary period. So this is precisely what caused both of those two recessions. But once you realize that, then you come to say, all right, let's look at the 1920s, the greatest economic growth in world history, certainly in American history, by taking the tax rates and cutting them by two-thirds, from 77% down to 25%. And during that time, rather than creating deficits, we turned deficits into surpluses. This was done under a Republican control for better part of a decade of the White House, Congress, both Congress and the Senate. All right? Those facts are irrefutable. Now, in the two darkest years of what became the Great Depression, with Republicans in control of two of the three branches, the budget was balanced between 1929 and 1930, with surpluses becoming a deficit of $19 billion in 1931. The tax rates were still at 25%. All right, so we're essentially treading water in the darkest years, 29, 30, and 31. Tax rates, 25%. Now, what's interesting is that if you look at economic productivity, the United States came out of what was labeled the Great Depression. It should have been the a great recession. The United States was coming out of it during the end of that period of Republican control and prior to the time FDR was elected. But FDR took an entirely different approach. In 1932, the Democrats took control of all three branches, maintaining a monolithic control of the U.S. government for 15 years. During that time, the deficits rose from surpluses that had preceded them to $23 billion, $34 billion, $12 billion, $36 billion, $18 billion, $5 billion, $24 billion, $18 billion, and then $41 billion. In 1940-1941. So all the way up to $41 billion, and we are more than a decade from the Great Depression, its commencement, and we are not yet involved in World War II. Now, in World War II, the deficits rose to $144 billion, $371 billion, $365 billion, and $320 billion in 1942 through 1945. The tax rate went from 25% when the Republicans were responsible for all three branches in 1931 to 63% in the first 4 years of FDR's administration. If you read any researched historical presentation of the Great Recession, what you find is that the United States was coming out of the recession in 1930 and 1931, and then FDR plunged the nation back into recession when he increased the tax rates in 31 from 25% to 63%. And he maintained them there for 4 years and then increased them to 79% during his second term, and in the first year of his third term, to 79%. That's why the Great Depression didn't end in 2 or 3 years, but went on for more than a decade. In 1941, the U.S. tax rate was increased to 81%. Then the top rate escalated to 88% in 1942, and in 1944 it peaked at 94%. Top wage earners, the most productive Americans, had 94% of their income confiscated by the U.S. government in 1944. In 1946, the war is over, and the deficit was still $55 billion. The federal tax rate was 91% on the most productive Americans. In 1947, Republicans would control Congress, although not the White House, and deficits were turned into surpluses because Congress is actually more influential than the president. And deficits were turned into surpluses, at least it is when it comes to government spending and taxation. The deficits were turned into surpluses of $50 and $25 billion. Followed by a break-even year. The top rate continued above 90% through 1963. And then it dropped to 77% and then to 70%. Now, in our program tomorrow, I'm going to take you from this period of time right after the end of World War II, which was really the world's only world war, to the present time. And this monolithic trend between robust economy, low taxation, and government surpluses under Republican administrations and control of all three branches versus the antithesis of that, high deficits, high taxation, and stagnant economies under Democratic-controlled administrations. Well, that trend was undeniable and should predict what we should do in the future, should tell us how to respond in the future. That trend becomes much muddier as we push forward into a time where there became very little difference between Republicans and Democrats, where Eisenhower, for example, was so liberal that the single most liberal and destructive judge ever elected to the Supreme Court, Earl Warren, was chosen by Dwight D. Eisenhower. And so we're going to look at what happened in the years after the war ended. This is a headline that I found that I'd like to share the story behind, and we'll share the story when we return to Shattering Myths after the break. But from the largest now publicist in America, the man responsible for booking more guests on talk radio shows than any other, he writes that America votes for a declaration of dependence as opposed to a declaration of independence. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. This headline definitely caught my eye. I've actually asked the author of this particular piece to be a guest on our show on an upcoming program. We'll see if that materializes. His name is Craig Smith. And what he wrote, and brilliant, he says, America votes for a declaration of dependence. On Tuesday, he said, voters reelected Barack Obama, affirming his policies and ideology. Now, Barack Obama is a socialist, and I don't say that because I'm interpreting. It is an undeniable conclusion. If you simply read his State of the Union address this last term and listen to how he wants to manage the economy, equating the management of the U.S. economy to the way that the U.S. controls its military, it is purely socialistic, as is his increase in taxation and his increase in government entitlements. So he writes, in effect, a narrow majority of voters repealed America's 1776 Declaration of Independence and replaced it with President Obama's Declaration of Dependence on ever bigger government, says economic expert Craig Smith, whose most recently published book is The Great Debasement, The 100-Year Dying of the Dollar, and How to Get America's Money Back. Now, if we have Craig Smith as a guest on the program, we will agree. In fact, we've been talking about the 100-year dying of the dollar. It's not actually, well, actually it is 100 years now because we're in the year 2012 moving to 2013, and the Federal Reserve and the progressive income tax were established in the year we began our review this morning, 1913. So it is a 100-year period of time. I do not think there is any way to salvage the problem, so we would disagree there. By voting for Mr. Obama, voters endorsed the president's efforts to turn America into a European social democratic welfare state such as France, thereby making America a nation governed through European-style dependency and collectivist government, says Smith. From Obamacare to giving waivers to end President Bill Clinton's requirement that those on welfare apply for jobs. It wasn't Bill Clinton's, that was really the contract with America. To hiring 11.4% more federal employees, President Obama has created or expanded dozens of programs to make more people government dependents, says Smith. That's actually his co-author, Lowell Ponte, who is a former think tank futurist. Quote, 49.1% of American households now have someone living there who gets a government check, says Ponte. Last Tuesday, we passed a tipping point and probably became a permanent welfare state as more than 50% of voters endorsed Mr. Obama's policy of rapidly expanding the welfare rolls and government employees. Taxpayers will pay a terrible price for this, and America will go into unstoppable economic decline. Now, I'm here to tell you, what we had done prior to this in accumulating the $16 trillion of national debt and of grossly inflating our federal budget and making the majority of Americans dependent upon the government had already put America on the rapid road to decline. This was just a crescendo along the march to our doom. This is someone hitting the cymbal on the deck of the Titanic as they rearranged the furniture. Millions on Election Day voted for President Obama to keep their government checks coming, says Ponte, and Mr. Obama's victory could mark November 6, 2012 is the day our 236-year-old Democratic Republic died. No, it doesn't mark the day that we died. America's death is still 10 to 15 years in our future. We are terminally ill. Terminally ill means that we are mortally wounded. There is no remedy that will resolve our problems. Oh, yes, I could list 100 things that America could do, that if America did immediately and completely, that America could be salvaged, but we're not going to do any of those things. And so America is mortally wounded because it will not only refuse the medication and the treatment that is required, but it's going to ingest ever more of the drugs and poison that has crippled the country up to this point. We'll return to this position piece and to the topic of our economy when Shattering Myths returns to the news in this time tomorrow.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that